We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis from the Wolves Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to part two of our Western Conference preview. We've already gone through the teams 15 through 9. And neither of us have mentioned Pelicans, Michael. I don't know if we're going to be mentioning them right off the bat here either. I don't know what your list looks like. So why don't you start out with your team? What team do you feel is going to grab that last spot in the Western Conference Finals that a lot of teams will be fighting for?
So this is actually a team that was already on your list. I believe you had them at like 10 or 11. I have them at 8. That's the Denver Nuggets. We talked a little bit about them in the last podcast, lost quite a few big pieces, Corey Brewer, Andre Iguodala, Costa Kufos, and it doesn't look like Danilo Gallinari will be back for a while. But again, I got them just sneaking in because I don't like some of the health issues of some of the other teams. Also, I think Denver's home court advantage is probably the best still in the NBA. I believe Brian Shaw brings some defense there. And I like the little subtle addition of Randy Foy. This was a team that just had a tough time spacing the floor last year. I think that they've definitely lost some defense with Iguodala and Brewer heading out. But I think they could be an even more explosive and up-tempo offensive team. And when you're running every night in Denver, I just think that'll give them enough of a home court advantage. I think they win something like 32 to 34 games at home. And even though, you know, they'll probably be a bad road team, I figure they only have to win 10 to 12 games on the road to sneak into that eighth spot.
Yeah. But you got to remember, I mean, the home court isn't everything. I mean, Denver was really, really bad for a really long time. And they were still playing there. I have a hard time throwing them out of the playoffs entirely because they do have Fareed. They still have Ty Lawson. I think both of those players are very good. But other than those two players, there's nothing on this team that makes me excited. JaVale McGee is, a crackhead. Not literally. Wilson Chandler is a purely ordinary small forward when you look at his actual numbers. I mean, Nate Robinson, I guess, scored a lot for the Bulls last year, especially in the playoffs. He might win a couple games for them, but I don't know. I can't stick with Denver. And instead, I went with Minnesota. We talked about them. They were, what, 10th on your list or even lower?
Yeah, I think they were 10th.
So I went with Minnesota just because, although they are a team of specialists, they have just a lot of individual talent. I don't think this is a team that particularly covers each other very well. But when you have a guy like Kevin Love out there who's going to grab so many rebounds and score so efficiently, and you got Pekovic rolling down the middle to as one of the best pick-and-roll finishers in the league, and you got Rubio who can defend extremely well and feed both of those guys, and you complement it with some solid shooting, I think that's good enough to squeeze it into the eighth spot. I don't think they go much higher than that, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still concerned by the Timberwolves' lack of depth. Again, if Rubio goes down, I have no clue who slides into that point guard position and runs this team now that Ridenour is gone. I would have a much more faith in them if they moved Derek Williams for a couple of pieces, like a backup point guard and a backup center, because I think he's probably their fourth or fifth best player, but I just don't see how he gets minutes. He'll be stuck behind Love. Maybe he could play with Love in small ball lineups where he's the four and Love's the five. But when that happens, that defense will just be atrocious. And if they try to squeeze him in and give him minutes at the three, I think he's a fish out of water there. So I like this team. If I see, or if you could tell me, they move Derek Williams for a solid backup point guard and a nice solid backup big, I would have more confidence in this team. But I've just seen Rubio go down with injuries, and honestly, if he does, this team could be terrible. Same goes for Kevin Love and Pekovic, two other guys who have a little bit of an injury history.
So I was thinking about that. You mentioned Derek Williams being, you know, a good trade candidate last time we talked about the Western Conference. And I was thinking, who could be a better trade partner for them than Phoenix? You send Derek Williams down to Phoenix for Dragic, or even figure out some way to make it larger and bring back Gortat. Maybe that's a little bit much. You don't need to go that far, but Dragic would be a very nice shooting guard, backup point guard kind of role for them. Phoenix could look at it as they're getting Derek Williams to try out and see if they have their power forward of the future. It might make sense.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a trade that I think instantly would make Minnesota better. Now you have a three-guard rotation of Dragic, Rubio, and Kevin Martin. You could even play those guys in spot minutes, all three of them on the floor at the same time. Your fourth guard would be Barea, which I think that's more of a role suited for him. And, you know, they got some solid backup bigs. I mean, they've got Ronnie Turiaf to give them spot minutes. I thought they have, don't they also have, Cunningham? Didn't Cunningham go there? Is he still with Memphis?
I think he's still with Memphis.
I don't remember, but yeah, I mean, I think that if you made a trade like that, I would be a lot more afraid of Minnesota than currently constructed. I think the key to that team is moving Derek Williams, and they just picked up his option for next season. They had till October 31st to decide, but I don't think that necessarily means they're keeping him. I just think that makes him more of an enticing trade asset, because if they trade him now, a team will have him guaranteed for two more years on a rookie contract. So that's a team, like I said, if they make a move like that, I would have more faith. But as of right now, I just don't like how thin they are at backup point guard and at backup big.
Yeah, so you are correct. They do still have Dante Cunningham on the roster. They also have, of course, their pick this year, Deng, out of Louisville.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he'll ever give them anything, but
yeah,
he's big.
I'll never forget, I was at a Orlando Magic game at one point when Darko Milicic was in his prime, and I had like the most optimistic guy sitting next to me in the stands, and every time, Jameer Nelson, way to go, Jameer, nice, way to hit that 20-footer, way to go, Dwight, on that putback layup. And the only thing he had to say for Darko is when Darko got the ball or ran up and down the court, he just said, way to be 7 feet, Darko. Really the only compliment he could give the guy.
Yeah, I guess the Darko tears his shirts very well.
Oh, Darko. So, all right. So it looks like, again, we had the same 12 through 15 just in a different order. It looks like we have the same 8 through 11 just in a slightly different order.
Yep. And the next team I'm going to have, I don't think is going to have much separation from that squad, that group of four. But I'll let you say your number 17 first, and then I'll tell you what mine is.
You just want me to throw this out there and shock everybody and put myself out. I mean, I know I'm putting myself out on a limb for this one. A lot of people see this team going the other way and shooting up and possibly being contenders this year in the West. I just don't see it. I think that they had a magical run last year, and they actually start to regress this season. I got the Golden State Warriors at number 7.
Hmm.
I looked at that team, and if you look at Jarrett Jack versus Andre Iguodala, I don't think in a vacuum that's even debatable. You would take Andre Iguodala 100 out of 100 times, but
yep.
I think there is something to be said for, first of all, just fit and chemistry. I mean, if you look at the 5-man lineups for Golden State last year, almost every one of their most successful ones featured Jarrett Jack and or Carl Landry. They were fantastic when they went small ball with Jack, Curry, and Klay Thompson were, you know, allowed to take Curry off the ball at times, or, you know, Curry could stay on the ball and Jack could run off. And I know theoretically you could do some of the same things with Iguodala because, yeah, he did play point guard in stretches. But I think it's a different dynamic. Iguodala can't create his shot the same way that Jarrett Jack can. He can't pull up off of a pick and roll. He doesn't create the same kind of space for your team. I just think offensively that small lineup that they used in Golden State, and even when they shifted Harrison Barnes to the four and had Carl Landry at the five, I mean, there's just so many interesting things they did. It was a team that was really hungry and, you know, it really come together. And I see that on paper they made additions that might outweigh their subtractions, but I'm just a huge believer in chemistry and when you have it and when you have 5-man groups that are so successful together. I don't think you could just pick out a key piece and replace it with another, even if that player is theoretically better. And then, you know, this team essentially has 3 Eric Gordons on their team. Every year, you and I go into the season worrying about Eric Gordon. We look at his history and say, you know, the numbers are not on his side. They say that he's going to get injured at some point this year and miss significant games, if not the entire season. The Golden State Warriors have 3 of those guys in Curry, Andrew Bogut, and David Lee. I mean, the numbers just say, you know, 2 of those guys, maybe all 3, are going to miss 20, 30, maybe more games this season. So just a lot of things I don't like. This is my bet, my lock of the season. Take the Golden State under in Vegas. It's just something I've felt strongly about, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they missed the playoffs altogether.
Wow. No, I'm not going there with Golden State. I actually feel that they'll be pretty solid. You got to remember, though, there is a bit of a they just remember the last taste they had of this team, and they played pretty well in that Denver series, and then they had, you know, at least one really awesome game against the Spurs, who took them out. But you got to actually just, like, calm down for a second and look at the numbers. And Harrison Barnes had a disappointing rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
He had one nice playoff series, but a pretty disappointing rookie season. Klay Thompson, if you just focus on his 3-point percentage, you think he's one of the best shooters around, one of the best guards, you know, shooting guards around. But he doesn't do much of anything else. And if you take his overall body of work, other than the shooting, he's kind of an empty player. Steph Curry has that ankle issue. And although I love Iguodala, and I think he's going to help this team actually pretty significantly, I think that's a very nice pickup for them, at least this year and next year. I don't see them making the leap. They're not going to suddenly be one of those teams that is now fighting for the top two or three seeds in the Western Conference. They're going to be a team that's probably going to hit 48, maybe 49 wins, be a, you know, fighting for the five or six, maybe somewhere around there. But yeah, I don't see them making a huge leap. But I don't see them falling like you do either.
Yeah, see, I couldn't have put it better. You said it right. Everybody remembers Harrison Barnes and Klay Thompson and even Steph Curry from those last two series, but those were not the guys that they were over the regular season. First of all, I mean, Harrison Barnes was borderline terrible in his rookie season, and he really played well because they put him at the four position, and he was actually covered by Tony Parker a large part of that series. The Spurs put their bigger guys on the threats, Curry and Thompson, and you know they didn't want Parker covering either of those guys, so they put him on Harrison Barnes. And now we're supposed to believe that he's a good player because you know he had some big games against Tony Parker in that series. Like, throw away your last memories. He was a well below average small forward. Al-Farouq Aminu had a better season than he had last year. So let's quit all this, you know, he's the next superstar small forward talk because he did well against Tony Parker. And Klay Thompson was very limited. I mean, he's a guy that when the Gordon for Thompson talks came up, a lot of Pelicans fans were willing to take that trade, but knew that they were selling for 50 cents on the dollar because it's not even close when both guys are fully healthy, which guy is better. So I think there's all this talk of, oh, they're the greatest shooting backcourt of all time. And, you know, Harrison Barnes was magnificent last year. And it's just not true. Curry had a magical run. The team was really fun to watch. You know, they ran into a Denver team that choked again, surprise, surprise, in the first round of the playoffs, really blew, what was it, game two at home and just never recovered. And then ran into a San Antonio team that they were able to give some matchup problems to because they played small ball. So certain guys got off in that series, but people are just remembering this team incorrectly. They were not that good last year. They were exciting the last couple of weeks in the playoffs, but, you know, they weren't as good as everybody seems to remember they were. So I don't know. I got seventh, and I would say if you were to tell me that they'll either be a top four seed or not in the playoffs, I would choose not in the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think they have a better chance of not being in the playoffs than making this jump into a top four seed that, you know, I see some people starting to project.
They could possibly hit a top four seed, but it won't because the things they're doing is because somebody getting hurt on one of the top three teams or top four teams. Two things I actually want to say about this. So Klay Thompson, he had a 12.7 PER last year, 15, of course, as an average player. People would probably be shocked if they actually knew that. I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh. I mean, think about it this way. He's playing 36 minutes a game. So this isn't a guy who's playing short minutes. 36 minutes a game, and he's averaging 16 points, 3 rebounds, and almost 4 assists. Or no, sorry, 3 rebounds and 2 assists per game and 1 steal. That is less than average in every single stat. The only number higher than average on his entire line is his 3-point shooting. So, I mean, I think it was Bill Simmons likes to always talk about how any wing player who's worth their salt should be able to put up like a 15-4 in the NBA if they get more than 32 minutes. Well, that's what Klay Thompson is. The other question I have for you, Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
He's number 6 in NBA rank. Now, there is no question this guy might be one of the greatest shooters of all time. Like, he's right there with Ray Allen, but 6th best player in the entire NBA.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy to me because first of all, Ray Allen in his prime would wipe the floor with Curry, Steph Curry, and I don't think Ray Allen was ever considered one of the top six players in the NBA. So that's a bit of an injustice. But again, people are just such prisoners of the moment, and I think sometimes they confuse best players with most fun players to watch. I mean, how many times do we have to watch Zach Randolph just absolutely shut down Blake Griffin and, you know, win a playoff series against him and just, you know, make Griffin look like a pedestrian NBA player until we realize Zach Randolph is just the better player, but he's not as fun to watch. He doesn't show up on SportsCenter as much. You know, there's two sides to the ball, and nobody can convince me that Steph Curry is even close to an average defender. I think if you're going to just turn on a random game of a team that's not your own, Golden State's got to be up there, and Steph Curry's got to be one of the most fun players to watch. But contributing to winning in multiple ways, which to me, any top 10 guys should be able to do, where even if they're not scoring, they, you know, find ways to win in other areas and contribute. You know, if basketball is a 5 or 6 tool game, these guys have 4 or 5 of those tools. Steph Curry is a phenomenal scorer who is, I would say, above average at making plays for others. I don't see the other fantastic tools in his belt. There's no way he, or a guy like Kyrie Irving, which I laughed at as well, are top 10 players in the NBA.
All right, so let's go to my number 17 then.
Mm.
You may have heard of them. They hail from Louisiana, and they are the New Orleans Pelicans.
Pelicans.
So, yeah, I got them at number 7, right above Minnesota. I don't think there's going to be a huge difference in the numbers of wins between Pelicans, Minnesota, Portland, Dallas, and Denver. I really don't. I think it's like a 3 or 4 game difference, except I fully expect one of those teams will collapse and fall out of everything, but the rest of the ones that live will be very tightly packed in. And that's where I think the drop-off in the West actually occurs. The Pelicans, of course, have the potential to be much higher, but I don't expect everything to go right. Nothing ever goes right with our team.
It did for one season in 2007 and 8. Maybe it happens every, what would that be, every 6 years.
I really hope it doesn't happen now, just so I won't have to like worry if that's the case.
So you got 246 possible games played between Gordon, Holiday, and Evans. How many games do those guys have to play combined of the 246 in order for the Pelicans to make the playoffs in your eyes?
200.
200, so each guy can miss on average 15 games, and you think this team would still be okay?
Yeah, I think so. Unless they're all happening at the same time.
Right.
But, no, I think this is like the thing nobody talks about is, these guys can all cover each other. They really can. Now, are they ideal for every role that a guard has to do? No. But if you have Eric Gordon, having Jrue Holiday and having Tyreke Evans on your team is a magnificent insurance policy. So, yeah, I mean, you can have a significant number of games missed by those guys and still be okay.
Let me ask you this. I mean, obviously the black hole on this team just continues to be this starting center position. Even if we don't call it starting center position, there's a need for another big man on this team to give you 15, 18 minutes a game. If it comes to the trade deadline, and essentially you could move expirings or, you know, whatever, and the 2016 first round pick, and that would get you a big that would get you into the 7th or 8th spot in the playoffs, versus you stand pat and do nothing and you finish as the 13th worst team in the NBA, just narrowly missing the playoffs. Would an asset like that be worth it to get you into the playoffs this year, even if that would mean you're one and done?
Well, is this a center who's going to be around for a while, or is it like what we were doing before where we were trading parts for, like, future away for, you know, Bonzi Wells and Mark Jackson and stuff like that?
I mean, it wouldn't guarantee you. It would be like the Carl Landry thing all over again, where it wouldn't guarantee you that he's going to stay, but it lets you audition him and lets him audition you. So,
okay. So like Gortat?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I would not want that to be done, actually. And it's just more because that seems kind of short-sighted just to do that for a very short... If we're not already pushing for the playoffs, there's going to have to be a big move over the summer of anyways. Like, if we just miss out or we're not even close and we're, like, you know, 6-7 games behind, there's got to be something shooken up over the summer. And I don't want to be spending assets to shore up something for right now that could be spent then to shore up something for the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just hear you saying that you think the difference between 11th in the West and 7th in the West could be 3, 4, 5 games. Mm-hmm. You know, if a guy like a Gortat or, you know, even if Memphis made Kufos available or a real under-the-radar guy that I'm looking forward to next year.
Don't say FK Udo.
No, in free agency next year, an under-the-radar guy that kind of fits the young veteran mold, Jordan Hill would be another guy that, you know, I wouldn't mind. I don't think he would cost a first-round pick. But anyway, if we're talking about 2-3 games difference between just missing the playoffs and 7th or 8th seed, I wonder if giving up a future asset like that, but getting this team in the playoffs, getting the, you know, the smell of it, the taste of it, the hunger for it, especially if they just get knocked out relatively easy, I wonder if it might be worth a future asset because, I mean, there'll be some decent guys out on the free agent market next year, but, you know, how do you really put a value on getting this team into the playoffs and getting them to taste that probably a year before most of the quote-unquote experts expect them to get there. I mean, the last question I got for you on this team, I'm sure obviously we'll talk about them a ton. To you, what is the bigger addition to this team? Going from Gravis Vasquez to Jrue Holiday or going from injured, hobbled Eric Gordon of last year, so that exact player, the you know, the games he played and the how efficient he was when he did play, to the Eric Gordon we've seen this preseason, and this presupposes that that guy is going to stay healthy. If he stays healthy, what is the bigger upgrade?
I'll even go this far with this one. I think that the shooting guard position, just in general, is a bigger upgrade than the point guard position. Even if Eric Gordon only spends half the season in uniform, having Tyreek Evans there over what we got from Austin Rivers last year is a massive upgrade. I think, like, Jrue Holiday, I mean, he's as good as Gravis Vasquez offensively, and he's a massive upgrade defensively. But having, I mean, it's almost, you know, actually, I don't like this question. I'm rebelling against your question, and here's why. I think there's just a whole lot of synergy between these two positions. I mean, the fact that you got both of those guys is, I mean, if you just look at one, you got, like, a nice upgrade. You look at the other one, you got a nice upgrade. You look at them together, you got a huge upgrade.
Yeah.
Because they can cover each other. They can work. They we no longer have to have one backcourt guy on the other team guarded by complete and utter garbage. even if they don't live up to their billing as really good defenders, it's still a major upgrade defensively, no matter how you look at it in the backcourt. So.
Yeah, no, I just bring it up because I hear a lot of people get excited about Holiday and Evans. But as big of an upgrade as they were over what we had before, I still think the majority of the growth from this team, if you're talking about going from a 27-win team to a 47-win team, if somehow you can measure who is responsible, I think a bigger part of the growth will be Anthony Davis taking the next leap, Al-Farouq Aminu improving, Eric Gordon being healthy and playing. I mean, I really think that a large part, the largest part of the growth of this team will come internally from guys who were here last year, and then Evans and Holiday are, you know, the icing on the cake thrown on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you want to keep, we'll talk about Pelicans enough. I think we should move on from them.
So
yeah. And I'll call out my next team real quick anyways, because we've already talked about them. So at six, I have your buddies Golden State.
Right.
I think they will be fighting with Memphis for the next spot. Who's your number six team?
Well, so six, I had the Pelicans. So again, okay. We have six and seven flop. So six through, you know, well, I mean, six, seven, we just have flopped. We have the other tiers. It looks like we have some similar tiers. It looks like you just have Golden State in what I would imagine as your second tier of the West. I've got Golden State actually in my third tier of the West with the Pelicans. I got the Pelicans, Golden State, and Denver, along with Minnesota, Portland. I got all of them kind of together in one tier. I don't have Golden State ahead. So that's what I have. And then at number five, I have the Memphis Grizzlies. I just think, I mean, this team is just so deep. I think that they're actually going to do, I think they could actually do some San Antonio-ish type things this year where, you know, they might have a night where they rest a guy. I know Mike Miller, I could almost guarantee they'll give him very small minutes and save him for the playoffs, but this team is too deep at every single position, and at some, they're three deep. They brought in a lot of guys that I really like. Kostakoufos is a guy people probably make fun of because of his name, don't realize how good he is, but I would say hands down, Marc Gasol and Kostakoufos is easily the best center combination in the NBA. I really don't even think it's close. They, you know, they have defense, they have efficient offense, they have a low post score, they have, you know, a big that they could run their offense through, or a point guard that they could run their offense through. The only thing that they don't have is outside shooting. They're not going to run away from you, but they'll beat you down, and then they'll find ways to win at the end of games. I think this is a team that I have at five, but I think it easily finishes as high as two or three.
Yeah. Yeah, so people focus a lot on the shooting. I'm not so focused on that for this team. I just think they need another ball handler more than they need another shooter. Because right now, all the weight is on the shoulders of Conley and Jared Bayless. Jared Bayless being one of your top guys who has to make decisions for you, that's not ending well. And B, Conley is really, really good, but you can't have him be taking all the pressure. He's not a high turnover guy. He's smart. He's fast. But like we've seen these past few years with the Hornets and Pelicans, you need a second ball handler out there, and they don't have one at all. You can't have Tony Allen doing anything. Quincy Pondexter is not your answer. Mike Miller is not your answer. I mean, there is not anybody here who's going to be able to be given the ball and create something for himself if the other team is just, you know, doubling down in the post positions nonstop. So I think if they can manage to swing some sort of deal somehow for a guy who just can shoulder that responsibility a little bit in a non-Rudy Gay sort of way, I think this team will vault to the Mount Rushmore of. I have two teams I think are way better than anything else in the West. I think they would join that group.
Yeah, all I will say is people have heard me talk on this podcast. At the University of Florida, Chandler Parsons was far and away the number two option. He was an afterthought. He was actually really only recruited by Florida because they wanted his high school teammate. Nick Calathes was the star at University of Florida. He was a triple-double waiting to happen. He was the higher recruit coming out of high school, vastly outperformed Chandler Parsons at University of Florida, and the Memphis Grizzlies just acquired him this offseason. He's on the team. He's been playing in Greece the last couple of years. I mean, another guy. He is a big point guard, 6'5", 6'6", point guard who could, you know, pass. I would say his number one attribute is his court vision. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a guy in January, February that people are asking where did he come from, because he was vast. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was Nick Calathes and everybody else at Florida, including Chandler Parsons. He was that far ahead of everybody there.
Well, he's been averaging 5 assists per game in the preseason and 19% shooting from the field.
Yeah.
But
yeah. But I mean, just a guy to keep your eyes on. But yeah, this Memphis Grizzly team, I think they could be as high as 2 or 3, which will make this next thing I say a little weird. If I look at all the teams in the Western Conference that people project to be above the Pelicans, this is the team that I feel most confident about that the Pelicans could go 3-1 or even 4-0 against. I think that Memphis is a better team, no doubt. But we've seen in the NBA time and time again, it's a game of matchups. I think the Pelicans match up phenomenally with this team, and I think they could win the season series, and if things break right, even sweep it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
This would be the team, if we made the playoffs, that I would want to see. I don't think if you match up against some of the other elites, I don't think there's any way the Pelicans are winning a playoff series. I think the only chance they would have of winning a playoff series is if they matched up against Memphis. I think this is a very good team, but just, you know, the way we match up with them, I actually think it's a team at that top tier that the Pelicans could beat and beat pretty regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So we both got Memphis at 5. Let's move on to number 4. I think I might surprise you here, but maybe not. I have the Oklahoma City Thunder at number 4.
You looked at my list.
Did you really do that too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're ruining it. So, yeah, I don't actually consider OKC. Like, last year, it was them and the Spurs in my mind. Those were the best two teams in the West. There wasn't anybody else really in it. This year, I don't think OKC's in that conversation. I think there are 3 teams that are clearly better than OKC. I think that their complete and utter failure to replace James Harden and Martin leaving. I mean, it was already going from an A-plus to a B-plus on offense. Now you're going to D. This team is going to struggle horribly without Russell Westbrook in there. I understand Kevin Durant is an amazing player. He's going to win games on his own. He's the best shooter around. Ibaka's okay. They're going to play pretty solid defense. But this team is not going to be able to stay on top and in contact with those top teams. And until Westbrook comes back, and I don't think they're going to have even enough firepower when he comes back to catch back up again.
So if Russell Westbrook was ready to go and 100% healthy on day one, would you have the Thunder at 4?
I'd probably still have them at 4.
Huh. Yeah, see, I wouldn't. To me,
I might have them at 3, but I don't know. I think I would probably still have them at 4.
Yeah, that would change the equation for me. You know, I think losing Martin's a downgrade, and who knows what we'll get for Jeremy Lamb. But if Westbrook was here, I think they would be able to carry and foster that load. I think that maybe you could even argue they would get better defensively, though their offense would go down. I think Steven Adams will give them some quality minutes at the back of big. I also think this could be the year. We've seen the Thunder you know, kind of hold all these young assets, kind of keep these guys, these future picks. I think this could be the year that they roll the dice and go the other way, bundle a couple of these assets for a veteran player that in hopes would put them over the top. The only thing is, I don't know if these assets are as valuable as they might have been in the past or they thought they might be. Like, can they really get anything for Perry Jones III? He was a hot name and it looked like a steal a year ago, but he's done absolutely nothing. So if they put him in a trade, you know, are they getting anything in return? So I think they're going to try to make a move. I just don't know if they'll be able to get as much for these assets as obviously they gave up in James Harden to get these assets. I always thought last year would have been a perfect time to make a move, trade that Toronto pick, Perry Jones III. I thought you could have got a great player with that. But now, you know, that time's kind of gone. But I still say if Russell Westbrook was was here from day one, I would have them at two or three. So, So Thunder at four, at number three. I guess I'll put it on you. Who do you have at three?
The Houston Rockets.
I think our list is going to be exactly the same coming down the stretch.
Yeah. So I think the Houston Rockets. There's a lot of questions there defensively. That team has two good defensive players. They play the exact same position. There's nobody else on that team who really cares at all about defense. I guess Patrick Beverley cares about defense, but he gambles like crazy. So I'm not sure that's a great defensive player, but at least he cares. The rest of this team doesn't care. They care about you make your basket so we can run back down the floor and score. You foul us, and then we basically get 3 points for every 2 points you put up.
Yeah.
And with Dwight Howard there, even if he can't make free throws, it's still going to get worse. I mean, people are still going to be fouling like crazy against this team. So, yeah, I think Houston's going to be a monster offensively.
I agree. I also think they have tons of depth. I mean, it looks like a place where, I mean, first of all, they're just literally adding everybody. They're going to have to cut a handful of guys before the season even starts to get down to the roster limit. But, you know, they got plenty of depth. They got shooters. You know, they got guys who could just give them spot minutes. They could play that style of basketball because of the depth they have. They still have a trade trip, Chip and a Seek. I don't think the Seek for Anderson move's ever going to happen, but maybe they get Ilyasova and another piece, so they get a stretch four there. Maybe, mm-hmm. Maybe Terrence Jones becomes the power forward that, you know, they want to fill that position combo of him and Monta Junis. Maybe they make it work with a couple of guys filling that in, but the weird thing is, I read a lot of Houston writers. I know they believe that this is the beginning of a long stretch because their team is relatively young. I firmly believe that they have a 2-year window. I think they have a honeymoon period with Dwight Howard where he says all the right things, believes all the right things, is happy to do whatever it takes. I believe this year and next year will be the best we ever see the Rockets as currently constructed. Then they have to pay Parsons a huge amount of money or lose him. And then I just think another Dwight saga starts to begin and, you know, they'll start heading downhill. I firmly believe that even though this team is relatively young, we are looking at a team with a 2-year window.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if I actually buy into that Dwight Howard is a horrible human being and is going to end up being unsatisfied and checking out. I mean,
what reason do we have not to believe that? It's happened. It's, you know, happened now consecutively at two different destinations.
Yeah. I think the Orlando thing, there's definitely some issues there. I don't necessarily have a problem with a guy being unhappy where he is. Did he handle it anywhere at all intelligently? But I don't hold it against Chris Paul that he wanted out of New Orleans.
But Chris,
well, I hold it against him a little bit. But he handled it differently.
But Chris,
Dwight Howard handled it like a moron.
Chris Paul kept playing through it. Played phenomenally well.
So Dwight Howard played through it too. He played very well up until he hurt his back, and then a lot of people decided, oh, he's faking. This guy had a major back injury that kept him out for quite a while, and then he didn't play very well for the Lakers. And part of it was obviously because he physically wasn't that capable. And honestly, if I went to the Lakers and I had to play with Kobe Bryant, I probably wouldn't want to be there either. But I don't know. I don't actually buy the fact that he's going to be like some stink face locker room cancer.
So if you had to bet on the next 5 years, will there be Dwight Howard drama or no drama over that period? You would honestly bet on no more, and the Dwight Howard drama is just gone.
As long as they consistently win.
Ugh.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, unless James Harden gets hurt, yes, I 100% believe that Harden and Howard will not have any issues. But, I mean, if Harden gets hurt and he has to feel like he's the man and he's carrying this team, and of course he can't do it if he doesn't have good support, he'll start sulking and pouting and acting like a baby. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. I mean, we could always find excuses why a player acted the way that they did and justify it, but objectively, players have patterns throughout their career. And, you know, it's every writer's job at the beginning of a new season to say, yeah, this is what went wrong for player X last year, but this is different, so it won't again. And as much as you and I do that about even Drew Holiday or Eric Gordon, and we try to be optimistic, far more times than not, the future looks a lot like the past. So, I mean, I'm not.
But then you also get people like Zach Randolph, who was the laughingstock of the league when he was in New York and L.A.
And that's why GMs continue to gamble, because there's the one or two or three stories that they could always point to, just like you did. Say, that guy was different. I could make Chris Kaman into the next whatever. And for every Zach Randolph, there are 40 Zach Randolphs who never changed.
It's true.
Anyway, I don't think he changes his stripe. I think there's a honeymoon period for a year, year and a half, maybe two at the most. And then again, and it's not only Dwight Howard, it's that they're going to have to pay Chandler Parsons. It's that if they haven't moved Ashik by then, he's a free agent. It could be some roster changes. This will be the last time they really have a truly flexible roster, because you're looking at essentially two max extensions with Harden and Howard, and you're going to have to play Parsons, then Ashik or whoever you trade for Ashik. I mean, I just think that a couple of things will really change dynamic-wise, so you're looking at a two-year window.
All right, so we have Houston third. Are we going to finally disagree with each other? Like, who's number two? Clippers, Spurs, that's all we got left. You got Spurs or Clippers?
I think one is built for the regular season, wants to win as many as possible in the regular season. The other is a great team that focuses a little bit more on the playoffs. That'll be the difference in best record, but not how far they get in the playoffs. I actually got the Spurs as the number two team record-wise in the West.
Hmm. I have the Clippers.
Hmm.
I like the Spurs just too much. They've got too much depth. I mean, last year they won all those games. They were playing their guys 28, 30 minutes. I don't expect those minutes to go down any. And I recognize that, yeah, Tim Duncan had one of his best seasons in like 5 years last year. The Clippers, there's too much there. I mean, we've already seen that Blake Griffin gets hurt sometimes. We know Chris Paul can get hurt sometimes. One of those guys is going to go down for a little bit. I'm not saying they're going to go down and have a major injury, but they're going to have to sit out 10 games. And this team, despite what everybody's saying about it, is really focused around the talent of those two guys. They've got nice complementary pieces. It's just a new flavor of the New Orleans Hornets that Chris Paul had. He's got the positions that are filled in around him have more or less talent. Like Blake Griffin's slightly better than David West was. Tyson Chandler's way better than DeAndre Jordan is. Peja and Dudley is, there's not much difference there. Peja was better a little bit. Reddick's a little bit better than Peterson was. Same team. And that basically means that we know what would happen if Chris Paul went down. That's a disaster. And we know what would happen if this one real release valve who can actually score himself, that's David West or Blake Griffin now, goes down, the team's going to suffer a little bit. So I just don't see this team being able to have the depth and the ability to absorb somebody sitting out for some period of time like the Spurs do. So that's why I had Spurs 1. It wouldn't shock me, though, if you were right and the Clippers took the crown.
Yeah.
I think those two guys are going to, those two teams are clearly going to be top of the West the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, here's my counter argument is that the Clippers finished just two games behind the Spurs last year. The Spurs had an exhaustive playoff run where, what, they must have played, I can't even figure it out, close to 110 games last year? I don't know. But they had that long run. The Clippers, I would say, got better this summer. Again, it's quite apparent which one of us values the head coach more, because you almost never bring it up. And to me, the biggest addition for the Clippers this year was going from maybe the 28th, 29th best coach in the NBA to a guy who I think is inarguably top three. So, you know,
really?
I would say I would say if you were to survey everybody on their top three coaches, I think that Popovich, Thibodeau, and Doc Rivers are far and away the top three coaches on, you know, most, if not all, of the ballots. I can't even think of another guy who, I mean, maybe people would argue Spoelstra, but come on.
Carlisle.
So which one of those guys do you think anybody, if we pulled GMs or other coach, whatever, you think Carlisle, who would he come over in those three coaches? Because I think
I'm not disagreeing that there's like this perception that Doc Rivers is an amazing coach out there. I agree. That's definitely a perception. I don't buy it. I mean, he went from like games away from being fired to suddenly one of the top three coaches in the league. Well, what happened there? He got Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen to come join his team, and Rondo turned into a star.
But he did.
I mean,
he did a good job in Orlando as well.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't buy Doc Rivers as that amazing coach. I'm not saying he's bad. And I will say Del Negro was bad.
Right.
So he is an improvement, but do I think he's like a three-game improvement?
Over Del Negro?
No.
I think I'm a three-game improvement over Del Negro.
Wow.
I mean, come on. This was one of the worst. This guy, they would have been better off letting Chris Paul coach the team.
He did.
But Del Negro still found ways to get in the way. I mean, to me, that is one of the biggest upgrades of the entire summer for any team is – going from in coaching, running your organization, just the little things. Like, there's this little story about how, well, I guess it's not little in LA. I imagine it's big, but essentially all the Lakers banners are up in the Staples Center, and now the Clippers for their home games are going to cover them up. You know, it's something that Doc Rivers, you know, was very integral in this process of saying, you know, why are these banners up during our game? Let's cover them up. And once I heard the Clippers were going to do that, my first thought was, wait a minute, why haven't they been doing that the last 20 years? Like, that's insane that in my home game that another team, my rival in the same exact league, I mean, this isn't a hockey team whose banners are up. This is another NBA franchise. And it's just little things like that, a mindset, you know, getting – even if Doc Rivers isn't much better of a coach, but now – the players, you know, believe a little bit more. I mean, I don't know. I think this is a huge upgrade. I think it's a multi-game upgrade. You know, Chris Paul missed that little stretch. You know, and also Vinny's rotations. were just awful. Like, every single game that Chauncey Billups played in last year, he started. Chauncey Billups is not a starter on this team, and especially not for a contending team. You know, we just saw mistake after mistake after mistake from Del Negro. I think Rivers gets him in there. I think the Clippers try to win every game, where San Antonio are, you know, obviously going to have those games where they sit multiple players. I just think, yeah, these are the class of the Western Conference, at least in the regular season. But, you know, I think the Clippers narrowly edge out San Antonio for the best record. But I'll tell you this, the Clippers will finish as the number one seed, but they will not make the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the faith in them either.
I mean, you have Oklahoma City at four. If Oklahoma City and the Clippers match up, the 1-4 in round two, and Westbrook's back, whatever, who would be the favorite in that series?
Well, Oklahoma City.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I would say that I would say it was a toss up between the Clippers and Houston if they ended up matching up to go, you know, to reach the Western Conference Finals. So I guess that's kind of a weird way of saying it. I would say of the top five on our list, the guys that I consider the real guys who could, if everything breaks right, win it all in the West, the only team I feel right now that the Clippers would beat is probably Memphis. I think the other three teams would beat them. Houston, it's a toss-up for me.
Yeah, see, I don't think Memphis or Houston have a chance of winning the Western Conference this year.
Okay.
I really think, I mean, I would put all of my chips on, I'd put 95% of my chips on the Spurs or Thunder, and I think there's a 5% chance just because, you know, Chris Paul might be able to make one magical run. I think there's a 5% chance, but I still, everything said and done, all the changes in the offseason, all the commotion, to me, you're still coming down to those two teams in the Western Conference. I'd put it at 95 to 98% chance that one of those two teams will represent the West again this year, just as they have the last couple.
Nah, it's going to be the Pelicans.
that would be nice. That would,
it's going to be a Clippers at two, Pelicans at seven. First round matchup, and the Pelicans are going to torch them.
How insane would the fan base go if that was the matchup?
I would love it.
Yeah.
I would enjoy that. Even if obviously when we lost that series, it would just still be fun.
Yeah.
Especially if they manage to like go in and like stomp on the Clippers in the first game. It's like the same thing. I still have, like, I have really fond memories of that first round out against the Lakers, just because they went in and just stepped on those guys once. Like, just there was nothing the Lakers were going to do that game to make Chris Paul lose. And I would love to have that same kind of memory, like, you know, the first time they roll into the playoffs and they go up against like a big juggernaut team, everybody's certain is going to just sweep them, and they just mash him a couple times. Be good.
Yeah, then maybe Anthony Davis will get married. Chris Paul will try to crawl back here and make a toast at his wedding about how he should never left New Orleans and now he wants to come back.
All right.
We'll say too bad. We've got a young point guard whose knees have 10 to 12 years left in them, so we'll pass.
Yeah, three 23-year-old guards.
Oh, I love it. I mean, that's our 15. The listeners have all our 15. We put ourselves out there so this way we could be ridiculed at the end of the year. So the least you could do, put yourself out there as well in the comments below. Go ahead, leave your seeds 1 through 15 in the West so we could refer to this in, what, 7, 8, 9 months and see who is the most wrong.
And we all know that I'll be the most right. Thanks for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back next week.